The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Fred Zinke's annual April trade article is out. Will he use the techniques he lays out in the article to do a Jedi mind trick on me in our mixed labor league? We'll find out on that and a whole lot more on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to RotoWire's Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Trader Fred, Fred Zinke. He is one of two players, I think, in the fantasy baseball industry when I think of as a frequent, avid, and prolific and good trader, the other being Ian Khan. I think of those two guys more than almost anybody else in fantasy baseball when they do these trades. So as it ties, you have an article up on Yahoo right now, Fred, talking about April trades.
Yeah, and just trying to maybe kind of grease the wheels in some Yahoo leagues for – I've never been able to understand the theory of people, and I've been hit with this in some of our industry leagues where someone will say, I'm not even considering trades until we've got like a month of regular season action in the books. I don't really get that. I don't see why we need a month. I think you can make a trade after your draft before the season even starts.
Yeah. Yeah, Ian did that in AL labor, actually. He had an imbalance between pitchers and hitters. Jason Kelet had the opposite, so they worked out a deal that night after the auction. So it can happen. It can work out pretty well.
Yeah, and that's coming from an auction, right? Like, if your league – but it's true. From an auction, someone leaves with a $6 guy who you had ranked for $12, but you just didn't have the $12, and you think to yourself, man, like – I got that guy valued at $12. He only paid $6. I wonder if he thinks of him as a $6 player. Because if he does, you know, maybe there's a path for me to get him and get someone who I think is a $12 player. But in a draft, I think it's even more so where you could make a trade the next day, in the sense of, especially in the early rounds, you're totally locked in on your options based on your draft slot. So you could have your number 3 ranked player fall all the way to 10th in your draft, and someone grabs him at 10 because he's so obvious by them. But maybe that person doesn't value him like you do, right? So there's an avenue maybe right there for you to go to that person and say, hey, I don't know how much you love that guy you took at 10th overall, but I really love him. Maybe we can work something out.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, sometimes it's hard to convince people to trade in early on. What are some of the, you know, even if it makes sense to them, just because like, oh, it's too early to trade. I just drafted this player. Obviously, I love him. Why would I want to trade him? What are some tips to get around that?
Yeah, I mean, there are some people I've come across who are just close to it. And I think for me, if they're close to it, then I'll back off because it's a long season. Mm-hmm. And I don't really want to burn a bridge in April trying to convince someone, especially like trying to convince someone a little bit like to make a trade that they're interested in. Okay. But if someone kind of slams the door in my face right away and says, you know, I can think of someone who I'm not going to name in the industry who did that once in a Tout Wars league with me. And he was fine. He wasn't rude or anything. He's just like, I won't even consider a trade until May. And I said, okay. And I just backed off because I don't want him to come out of this of April with an impression that I waste his time. And I am kind of, once he tells me.
Yeah. You don't want to be the telemarketer of your league.
Yeah. So I think if they're at least open to it, I think, and actually this isn't in the article as much because I really focused on just things specific to early in the season, but if they're open, like I think if they're open to the idea of a trade, then I think you just really open up your roster and you start saying to them, Like, who do you like? Who do you like on my roster? Who do you feel like you might like on my roster more than I do? That you, like, give me some names. Give me three names, five names. Give me some names on my roster that you're like, oh, yeah, that guy. I would have loved to have gotten that guy. And then I'll see if I can put together an offer or two offers or three offers with that guy in it. And we can kind of work from there. I think it's hard for someone to slam the door in your face when all you're asking of them is just name some guys on my team that you feel like you're kind of on the high end. You're on the high end on, because again, right. Like I may not be on the high end on everyone on my team. Some of them may have just filled a need, or I didn't really love anyone on the board when it came to me in round 14. And that guy was the highest guy on my list, but I wasn't in love with the pick. And you know, maybe he names that guy, and then maybe I go and make some offers involving that guy. So I think putting the ball in their court and giving them a lot of choice is always a great way to start things off, especially earlier in the season.
Yeah, for sure. And I always like to, you know, I always like it when someone approaches me to come at me with an actual offer in hand.
Yeah. Yes.
Or, you know, if you're going to engage, you're going to start the conversation. Don't start off by saying, I really like Josh Hader. What's it going to take to get Josh? What do you want for Josh Hader? That shows that you didn't put the time in to look at your roster. Yeah. Put the time in.
Or you don't have the guts. I think it's like a little bit like you just don't have the, like yeah. Some people just struggle to like, they hesitate, to put an offer out there. Right. And because then you're kind of married to that offer, right? Like, if I said to you right now, you know, I'll give you these two players for Kyle Tucker in our labor league, and you said, sure. Okay, now we're doing it. So sometimes I think people struggle with the finality of that and to put it out there. But I think that's what you have to do. I like to do the legwork. If I want to make a deal, I'll do the legwork. So what I would ask you is, for example, in our labor league is name a few guys off my roster that you'd be interested in acquiring based on their position or just how much you like them. You do that. And then I will put together hopefully multiple trade offers and I'll give you firm offers that you can consider. I think that's, I'm going to do most of the work. But you're going to get a fair amount of control because you're going to get to talk about which players you're going to get in the deal.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And I think that's really important to kind of approach it that way. So now I'm going to go look at your labor roster. And I know you purportedly don't need another closer, but I'm going to look anyhow because I have extras and I need help at a lot of places. For instance, second base. I've got Andy Abania starting at second base right now. I really like Jake Cronenworth, Fred. What would it take to get him off? No, just kidding.
No, but that's how it starts. Like if you said, I'd love to get Jake Cronenworth in a deal.
Yep.
Then maybe I sit down, you know, after we're done recording or something and I take a look at my team and I take a look at your team and I decide, you know, okay, maybe I would trade Jake Cronenworth for a closer or something like that. Or, you know, maybe I decide I can't afford to trade Cronenworth. Although one of my April tips is you have to be willing to unbalance your roster. So actually, the correct answer is I would trade you Cronenworth if the guy I'm getting back is someone I like better than Cronenworth.
There you go.
Because there's a lot of time to get your roster balanced again.
There absolutely is. And I think it's important to remember that there. My starting pitching for me is actually where I probably really need the help in that league. There's a reason why I had David Robertson benched last week. Two reasons. One, I was just lacking starting pitching, and two, he was going to Coors Field for four games and wasn't quite sure how he's going to be used. Now I realize his usage is what it is. I'm going to be more inclined to go with it, but I'm hurting at starting pitching.
Except that I just lost one this afternoon in Alex Cobb, hopefully for not long.
Yeah, let's talk Alex Cobb. It's an adductor strain. He immediately pitched the first inning of the doubleheader. Now, granted, they would like to have the Giants would like to have the extra bat. The extra arm for the second half of the doubleheader. Yeah. But it, you know, we had Jesse Morse chime in after and said, it's, you know, adductor is another word for groin strain, basically. And that's his push leg. They expect him to miss about 2 weeks if it's a grade one, maybe a little longer because it's his push leg. But, and I know Cobb was disputing whether he need to go on the IL immediately after the game. But when the team does it that quickly, you know, even with a doubleheader, come on. They've got like 15 pitchers on the active roster. Yeah. How badly do you really need that extra pitcher? But there you go. That's what they want to do. So they're putting him on there. That's the problem with Cobb. And this is unrelated to his other injuries, but you hate seeing it right away like this.
Absolutely. We've already seen both sides of him, right? He came out with the increased velocity, really good results, lots of strikeouts. He was cruising along today, and then an injury crops up, and that's been a consistent problem for him, as injuries throughout his career. This one's especially annoying because it was at the beginning of a two-start week. He's supposed to start Sunday against the Nats, so you don't get that second start now. I mean, if all goes well, maybe you just sit him next week, and then he's back in your lineup the following week. That would be the best case scenario.
Who replaces Cobb in the rotation?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't, since it's so fresh.
You have not committed their depth chart to memory, including the organizational, like, long-term depth chart? Come on.
I haven't. So while I pull that up, do you have an idea of who replaces him in the rotation?
Well, I was pulling it up while you, that's why I was asking you the question there. But, well, it's not Matthew Boyd. He's going to be out for,
he's not ready.
He's not ready. It might be captain. It might be a bullpen start that day.
Tyler Beattie's in their bullpen.
Yeah, he could go. Sammy Long is another
guy.
Yeah,
Sam Long makes sense. Or a combination. Sam Long throws three innings. Tyler Beattie throws two. There's your start. Yep. Could be something like that.
Yeah. Long's only pitched in two outings so far this season. Only thrown one and a third. That might actually work against him in a way for this, because he's not stretched out at all. Beattie has gone multiple innings. He's gone four innings and two outings. So seems like he's got a little longer. Like, I mean, granted, it's Johnny Holstaff, regardless of which of those two. But maybe Beattie can go three and Long go two. Something of that nature there. But we'll see how they adapt here the other way. And the thing is, that's something they're going to have to deal with there.
Yeah, I mean, they're also on the East Coast all week, and the weather on the East Coast this week is sketchy. So they've already had one rain out yesterday. If they get one more this week, they might be able to skip that spot.
Looks miserable everywhere there. Cleveland, they got postponed again today. Yeah. It looks really stinking cold in all these cities. Chicago's looked cold all along.
You miss it, right?
I totally miss it. I miss the seasons, Fred, except for when it's April and it's still cold. No, I don't miss that at all. Although it was weird. We had a weekend in early April where it was 99 here. So that was too much the other extreme. But
I take it. I take it right about now.
I bet you would. Toronto is not warm right now. Weird. Strange.
Yeah, slightly above the freezing mark the last few days. I know Scott Pianowski's been complaining about his lack of golfing and the fact that it snowed where he is in Michigan yesterday. It snowed at my house too. Yeah. It's always cold in April. Like, we go through this every year, I think, too, with teams and rainouts, and it's annoying. And then May comes along and this all settles down. But for the Giants, it could work to their advantage if they did have one rainout sometime this week and were able to skip Cobb's spot without using that bullpen day.
Right, if they don't have to do another doubleheader there. Yeah. Sean Davis, he's in the same boat as me. I'm also a former Chicagoan, and he misses how little he misses Chicago and how much he loves New Orleans. So, I miss Chicago. That's the difference. I do miss Chicago. I love Chicago. Had a great time there. Good 10 years of my life there, and I thought I'd always go back, and I'm not, but that's
and
okay
you can
too.
Miss a city without missing the weather, I guess.
Exactly. I can still go visit it and that's visit my friends
in the summer.
And that's what I'll do. Yes. Yeah. Even in the early autumn, that's fine.
Yes. Yes.
April is just a bad time to go visit.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm wearing these Kansas City Moose t-shirt, courtesy of Anthony Gelati. He is an NFBC player, frequent listener and commenter on the podcast. So, Gialdi, excuse me. I even asked him how to pronounce it, then I butchered anything. Anthony Gialdi, thank you for the t-shirt. It's pretty awesome. So anyways, I did live in Kansas as well. So at one point I missed that less than I missed Chicago, for what it's worth. I never lived in KC though. So that's the difference. Which, and by the way, there's Kansas City, Kansas. Don't think I'm trying to get that wrong or anything like that. Anyways, going back to tying everything full circle here. So a couple other things, couple other the trade tip hints besides besides just like doing all the legwork ahead of time, identify like those who have surplus. I think that's actually a really good idea. It's like try to even though you may not be balanced yourself, but try to find someone who will be looking to trade, will be looking to have an extra of one thing or a shortage of another. Again, doing the legwork, looking at the other players' rosters. I think that's super important as well.
Yeah, I mean, labor is a great example, right? If I was looking for a closer, like you would be a great fit, right? You have right now, you have three. If we count Gallegos, which has been good since we talked last week, he's had a couple saves. Robertson's going good. Class A is a closer. Like you right now have three closers. Are you going to have three closers all year? I don't know. But right now you have three closers, which means you'd probably be more open-minded trading me a closer if I wanted one than a lot of the other teams in the league. And at least try to start with someone who has a surplus. You know, if you go look at your league standings right now and someone in your league has already has a six steal or eight steal lead on everybody else, you know, even if that's a little inflated, maybe it has like a Jose Altuve already has two. And it's probably only going to have five or six or something like that. But if someone has a lead in one of the categories, first of all, they probably have talent in that category. And second of all, you know, you can go to them and say, "Hey, you're already starting to pull away in steals. You know, are you interested in trading me someone who can steal some bases for my team?" So I think that you just want to get people who are in a place where they'll have an open mind to making an April trade, and
Yep.
that's one way to do it.
Absolutely. A couple other injury moves that have happened since the start of the show, actually. The Reds put two guys on the IL in Jonathan India and Mike Moustakas. India, he got hurt on Thursday night, and they kind of were day to day. Okay, maybe he'll come back Sunday. No, maybe he'll come back Monday. No, but we're going to decide by tomorrow. Well, they decided finally that he is on the IL. They can only backdate it 3 days, so that's one extra day they wasted there. But the Reds' offense is in a bad way right now. They are a really awful offensive team right now.
Are the Reds someone you would really target with streaming starters
100%.
until India's back at least?
Even when India is back, I think I would still target them, especially when they're on the road. Maybe not in Cincinnati, but you know, Votto is slumping. Tommy Pham broke out of it yesterday, finally. He had his first hit on Saturday night. That was the game I went to, by the way. So I got to see Hunter Green
Nice.
pitch. That was cool. But he got Pham's first hit came in the ninth inning of Saturday night, like their ninth game. Now, he missed a couple of games with an injury, but he was off to a terrible start. But yesterday, went to San Diego. He's on his starting off his quote-unquote revenge tour because he played for the Padres. You call it your revenge tour, and then you wonder why you're getting booed. But anyways, he homered in his first at bat. Had a double in a second. Later had a single, you know. Good, finally had a good set of at bats, so maybe he's breaking out of it. But this is still, it's just an awful lineup. I mean, you look at that lineup on a daily basis, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm definitely going to use the pitcher. I used Joe Musgrove tonight in Tout Wars Daily. Are you doing Tout Daily?
I'm not. I've never done Tout Daily before.
Por que no? Why not?
I don't know. I don't know. I just, you know me, I always kind of limit how many things I put my hands in. So like
Yeah, this is a
I've
short
got
time
this year like
commitment.
my 10 fantasy teams or whatever it is, and then
Okay.
I feel like that's all I want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's yeah, I'm careful with how many things I get involved with. And I've never gotten into Tote Daily. I probably should. It's probably not as much time or work as I think it is.
No, it's not. You put together a lineup on Tuesday and Friday, basically, and not every Tuesday, not every Friday. So it's pretty easy. And you don't have to manage it. You just put it in and
Yeah.
go root for your team.
Yeah.
But I used Joe Musgrove tonight in Tout Daily against the Reds. And I
Before we leave your
used,
Reds, Joey
yeah.
Votto. I got asked this question on Twitter. Could you drop Joey Votto in a 12-team league?
Nope.
What
Nope.
if it was a Yahoo league where the benches are really small?
No. I mean,
What if
do
it's a
you?
Yahoo league that doesn't have a corner infield spot? Now I think you could.
No, but. Then I'm at least I'm thinking about finding a bench spot for him. Now, if it the problem is, there's so many pitchers getting hurt right now, that chances are you have some red on your roster right now too, and that's the trouble with short benches. Although in a Yahoo League, you usually have at least two IL spots to kind of accommodate that for a little bit. Friends and family, we have two IL spots. Now we don't have that's not a lot. There are leagues that we have more than two injured players, but nonetheless, no. After what Votto did last year, no way. No way am I cutting him.
I said that if it was a like a say like a 12-team head-to-head, so there's only really need to have 12 first basemen, then I think you could consider it. I don't know if Votto was in my top 12 first basemen on draft day. I don't think he was. But I said, and he's obviously started slowly and the lineup looks weak. So you were an emphatic no. So does that mean you're a buy low on Votto guy
Apparently,
right
I
now?
am.
Because
Apparently,
there
I
aren't going
am.
to be people who are going to look at him and say he's 38. He's got a.
Are you selling? Do you have Votto this year?
I have no Votto. There was kind of, someone was asking me about this the other day. I think Jeff Zimmerman was, and I said there was kind of a clump of first basemen that went in the pick 150 range, and I had him kind of at the bottom of the clump. So I ended up with a lot more of Anthony Rizzo and some of the other first basemen, and not as much of Votto. Well, no yeah. Votto.
Well, in in labor, I actually missed out on that clump entirely, and I'm starting Trey Mancini there, so I can improve. I think Votto would still be an improvement. And the thing is, I only have one other first base eligible guy, and that's Tyler Stevenson, who I'm obviously not going to use at first base. So I'm buying Votto. If the labor owner, the labor manager that has Votto, come talk to me. I'll trade for Votto again. So fast, it'll make your head spin. I will have something better than Ian Kennedy to offer too.
That's Ryan Bloomfield. So he's got Votto in his corner spot. So there's your man to contact after we finish recording. He's got Paul Goldschmidt at first, so he doesn't really need. He's got some multi-position guys on his team. He's got Rowdy Tellez on his bench, so he doesn't really need to get a first baseman back.
Closer for Votto. Here we go. Let's go. Definitely.
There you go. I'm playing matchmaker tonight.
You are. So you couldn't do it with me. You know, you couldn't trade with me, but you know, okay, fine. You found perhaps a willing trader. I'm using Trey Mancini and I've in my first base slot, and I got Jonathan Villar in a corner slot. So yes, I can improve. I can definitely upgrade there.
There you go.
Have room to upgrade. I have room to upgrade a lot of spots. I have a lot of slumpers right now. Bobby Witt Jr., Kyle Tucker is often such a bad start there.
Yeah. But, yes. I'm not worried about Kyle Tucker.
I'm not either.
No.
And I'm not worried about Dylan Carlson, who's off to a terrible start too. I'm not worried about Witt even. I think there's maybe a little bit more reason to worry about Witt, but just a little bit, not even that much.
With Carlson, are you worried that the slow start will just get him put back at the bottom of the lineup at some point?
Maybe, but I think even then it'll be temporary. It might be just a get him going sort of thing.
Right. Yep. That's quite possible. Or they put him at the bottom of the lineup, then he starts hitting better, and they're like, hey, maybe he's more comfortable down here. I always hate it when they do that.
I do too.
Maybe he's more comfortable down here. Oh, okay. Sure.
I've fallen into that trap before. The order doesn't dictate the hitter. The hitter dictates the order. I mean,
right.
Jonathan India didn't become a better hitter last year because he let off. His skills made him a good leadoff hitter. I think that's the difference.
Yes, and circling all the way back to India going on the IL, Moustakas going on the IL late next week. So on the weekend series next week, they go to Coors. So all you care if you have India or Moustakas on your team is that they're back, especially India, is that they're back off the IL in time for that Coors series.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah. We'll talk. I'm going to talk about Coors and the run scoring environment generally, but first, got to share a quick sponsor note from Vivid Seats. Baseball is back. That's right. An entire glorious season, all 162 games. And with live events resuming, you can actually be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. Every backdoor slider, every round tripper, every doubleheader can be experienced live. And with Vivid Seats rewards, you can start earning free tickets from your very first purchase. Just buy, collect stamps, and redeem. It's that easy. From behind the dugout to upper level, Vivid Seats has you covered for all the games that matter to you. Pro tip, buy tickets for your whole group. Split the bill and make progress towards your free ticket even faster. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, life happens live. I actually used Vivid Seats on Saturday night to go watch the Reds and Dodgers. Nice. Worked out well. Very easy to do it. Just everything is on the mobile app, and you have to just walk right in after that show and your online ticket. So it worked out well. You used them for a Jays game last year. So it's a good app. We use it. We like it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's talk. So you mentioned Coors Field, and you want to use that launch point. It's not that Coors necessarily is terrible, but you know, we haven't had those bonkers games in Coors yet, and scoring in baseball as a whole is way down. Going into today, batting averages were at 233. That first weekend is 222, but that was just like first 3 days, top starters, et cetera. But still, it's kind of stabilized at low 230s. Jason Collette wrote about in Collette Calls over the weekend on RotoWire, which you can check out, rotowire.com/try. If you don't already subscribe, get that free 10-day trial. Check out Jason's article. It's really good. But Joe Sheehan wrote about it in his newsletter today. Can't get you a free comp on that, but just go to joesheehan.com and subscribe to the newsletter. It's really good. Home runs are way down. It was like 1.22 per team last year per game. It's 0.96 this year and falling. I think Sunday there were 15 homers in 14 games. We talked about the weather. Sure, certainly some of that is there, but it's also the ball too. It's absolutely the ball. Todd Zola did some work. Joe Sheehan has done some work illustrating that first 300 games last year versus first 300 games this year, it's a big drop. Even though, you know, exit velocities are similar, you're just getting less distance per exit velocity.
Yeah, well, they've put like I would have given the knee-jerk reactions, and I do think these are always part of the story. Like, I do think we go through this every year where the weather's not as good in April, but then also the pitching staffs are healthier in April. Like, you have more, not every team has a competent rotation right now, but more of them do, right? We see pitchers kind of bite the dust as through the first half of the season, and there's so many teams, it feels like, down the stretch that are just rolling out, you know, one bad pitcher after another. So between the pitching staffs being better, it does seem like it takes hitters a little while at the start of the season to get their timing down, which I think every year, I feel like at the start of the year, there are a lot of low batting averages. But I haven't done the research on the ball. And if they have, and if they say that that the balls aren't carrying as far this year as compared to last year. Last year, at the beginning of the year, were they using the leftovers from the 2020 season?
So that's the problem is, you know, they're not telling us. But there were two, there was definitely the new ball. There was definitely the crackdown on the sticky stuff. And then the second half of the season, it sounded like they were using both of them there a little bit. You mentioned like the lack of attrition in the rotations. It's also true in the bullpen. Look at the Padres as an example last year, how they burned out so many relievers. And you start getting those guys, you start getting into digging deeper into like call-ups and things of that nature. And sometimes you find some gems, but you also find a bunch of other pitchers that don't belong there. I wouldn't say deserve. That's the wrong word. Yeah. Don't belong there. They're clearly overmatched. You look at the Reds bullpen right now and all the tack on runs they're giving up. I mean, that's going to becomes more true elsewhere. All that's true, and yet I still think it's I think we've had an overall, perhaps I want to say permanent change, but a significant structural change too. And I think that's true. I think that's a problem. Sean mentions a shorter spring is hurting hitters. It could be hurting hitters. Hurts pitchers too, probably in terms of how long they can go into games. Yep. Humidor in all 30 ballparks is another issue. I mean, there's a medley of issues right now, but. I want to see more offense. I'm looking up, like, I've got my grid channel up here on DirecTV, and I'm counting 1, 2, 3 of the 7 are 0-0 still. We do have, you know, including one of those games in the fourth inning with the great starting pitching matchup of, and wait for it, it's a real beaut this time. Joan Adon and Tyler Gilbert making a spot start. That's not good. Not great, Bob.
No, I don't think it's good for the game to have, and I don't mind a good pitcher's duel, but that's not a pitcher's duel, what you just described. I don't, actually, it's funny that you mentioned this. I just watched, not for the first time, but just happened, there was a rainout last night and yesterday. Anyways, I ended up rewatching the Maguire-Sosa ESPN 30 for 30.
Okay.
And I like all the 30 for 30s. It's not my favorite or anything, but it's fine. But it just took me back. That was about the first year that I played fantasy, and just the stats, not just from those two guys, obviously, like the stats. And I know this, they were steroid fueled from some of the guys, but just a baseball environment where there was a lot of offense. There was also a lot of, there were also plenty of strikeouts. It was really exciting.
Yeah. And, well, and also keep in mind where, you know, there might've been a lively ball then too. And there was expansion, and that also is a huge factor in terms of, you know, you add 30 more pitchers to the pool, all of a sudden, it's a lot easier to hit. Weird. Strange.
Yes. So, I think we could use some more offense to hopefully it picks up. It will pick up. It's just to what degree it's going to pick up, and will it pick up to, say, even the point it was at last year? You combine the lack of runs with also the lack of balls being put in play. Because it's not like teams are just stranding base runners. They're not getting base runners. And it's not a great game. By the way, there's one team in baseball one that has an 800 OPS so far this year. Do you want to take one guess who it is? And it makes perfect sense. And it's not a good lineup.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's not a good lineup.
In my opinion, it's not a good lineup.
Rockies?
Yeah, because they've played 8 out of 10 at home.
Yeah.
So they played. Coors Field remains undefeated in helping hitters.
And they beat up on the Rangers for a couple games. I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, and then third place is the Cubs. Also not an amazing lineup because they just finished four games.
In fact, it's so funny. I was watching Cubs and Rays yesterday because it was, I think, the first game that wasn't postponed in the evening yesterday. And they did this little thing like, hey, like the lead into the show, like, hey, the Cubs are leading baseball in batting average. Here's some keys of how they're doing it. And I was like, four games in Coors, three games against the Pirates. Yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it pretty easily.
Yeah. So, I mean, those things are going to drop. It's a good reminder for fantasy managers that, like, don't get carried away with some of your Rockies and some of your Cubs. You know, they may not produce at this level all season. I just like thinking back to like, it's all the things. We're not getting base runners. We're not getting runs. We're not getting stolen bases, which are fun for fans. Like just looking at the Cubs, they've played 11 games. They're one of the better offensive teams in baseball so far this year. Top three in batting average. They've got one stolen base. Like, I get that steals don't manufacture runs like we used to think they do, but they are fun and they are exciting. So, well,
and doubles and triples and singles are down generally. And guess what? You know, the manufacturing runs is not just the stealing. It's all the little hits, and we're getting fewer hits. I mean, it goes back to the batting average point here. And, you know, the pitching is just so much better. Look, Joe's piece talked about the average fastball velocity keeps going up and up. You know, it's over 93 miles an hour. All pitchers in baseball, the average fastball velocity is 93. That's not something you saw in the 80s and 90s. You were lucky to find two guys that could throw 93, let alone an average.
Yes. And that, I think Jeff Zimmerman pointed it on Twitter the other day that I think it was the Jays had faced, so maybe like 2 or 3 days ago, but the Jays up to that point had faced an average fastball velocity. I think it was in the high 94s far this season. Like they were at the top of the league as far as what they had faced an average fastball velocity. So yeah, that's putting a tremendous amount of pressure on hitters and it's leading to less trips on base. I don't know exactly what the answer is. You could just juice the ball again so they hit more home runs.
Yep.
If that's not going to get you a dynamic base running you know, stealing bases, going first to third on a single. It's not going to get you plays at second base, plays at third base. It's not going to get you that kind of game. It would get you more runs, at least. If you want to do that, you'd need probably more drastic changes, like changing the mound or something to try to get back to like old time baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's got to change the pitching somehow to reverse this course. And there are no easy answers because it's going to mess up the pitchers. I mean, it's hard to pitch too, but just a lot of the technical advancements have been on the pitching side, as Joe also pointed out in the article too. And that's the thing that's changed a little bit here. So, yeah, I mean, the last year for if you wanted to hit 90th percentile or, you know, excuse me, 80th percentile in batting average in like the NFBC, you need a 261 average for your team. That would put you at like 95th percentile this year. It's affecting our fantasy leagues on a disproportionate basis. You got a 240 hitter. That's an average hitter hitting for average hitter now. He doesn't kill you. 210 doesn't even destroy you. It's annoying, but it doesn't destroy you.
Yeah. There are currently six teams hitting under 210. Six. So the Diamondbacks are hitting 157.
Oh,
as a team, the Orioles have four home runs so far this season. Those are just, and none of those teams are last in OPS.
Right.
Your Cincinnati Reds.
Yep.
181 batting average, 541.
They're a tough watch. They're a real tough watch. I mean, I enjoyed watching Hunter Green. That was fun.
He is fun. Yeah.
Yeah. He threw 39 pitches, 100 miles an hour or more out of his 80 pitches. And it looks easy. It doesn't look like he's straining. Now, I'm sure it's just he's got a smooth delivery. And I don't want to go, you know, and he's already been hurt before. So I'm not going to try to make the Mark Pryor. You know, he's not going to get hurt with that delivery claim or anything like that. But it was fun to watch. He was super fun to watch. It's just then the Reds had to hit, and that wasn't so fun.
At least they didn't hit for long, so you could get back to watching.
That game flew by. Just flew by. And it was Saturday night traffic, 51,000 people going to Dodger Stadium. You know, Dodger fans don't suck. Dodger Stadium traffic sucks. It took we left 2 hours before. I live like 15 minutes away from, maybe 20 minutes away from Dodger Stadium. We left the house 2 hours before the game, had to make one stop to pick up my daughter's boyfriend. And we still, we were projected to get there an hour and 20 before the game, according to Google Maps. We got in the second inning.
What?
Yes. Just the traffic into the stadium itself. The stadium parking lots was miserable. Just awful. I took a picture from the upper deck where I was sitting. Third inning, you see all these cars, you know, jammed up, not just streaming in, but inching into the parking lots. People were still entering the game in the fifth inning. And it was a quick game because the Reds had no hits. It was 0-0 going into the sixth inning in that game. So, you know, wasn't many pitching changes.
No public transit options for you guys?
They're terrible. Hardly, especially getting up the hill to the stadium itself. You can take it like into the city and then take a bus in, but then you're stuck in the same traffic. So yeah, it's really bad. I haven't, maybe there's an intrepid listener out there that has figured out a way to beat the system. I haven't figured it out yet, except for like leave, you know, get there for batting practice, but that's not feasible when you're going with your family. Sometimes I'm going with my buddies. Sure. More time to drink beer. It's all good, but
ride your bike. The weather's good. Maybe ride your bike there
and park it where?
Exactly. I don't know. Isn't there a spot to put your bike?
I haven't seen one. I'm not denying it exists.
There's always a tree you can lock your bike up to.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the bike thieves never have a problem defeating that lock or anything like that. Right.
Hey, I just said ride your bike to the stadium. You might have to walk home.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Let's switch topics. Last week you were the Stephen Kwan guy. This week you're the Taylor Ward guy. Sell me on him.
Well, Joe Maddon says he's going to be his everyday right fielder. He said that before Taylor Ward got hurt. And then since Taylor Ward's been back, he has been his everyday right fielder. And so far, he's hit third, fourth, and second in the lineup. So I know some of him moving around is related to Mike Trout not being there. And one day, Anthony Rendon wasn't there. But it seems like Maddon is going to give him a real shot to not only play every day, but also to hit in the primary, you know, spots in the lineup. So, and Ward is someone who's like, he hasn't broke out in the majors yet, but his results last year, they weren't bad. Like, he didn't look overmatched. I'm just pulling up his OPS from last year. It was 769. Yeah. So that's like you're holding your own in the majors at 769. You go back and look at his minor league career. He's not young. Like, he's already 28 years old. So he's certainly not a prospect. But I forget exactly what I put in, but it was his last 122 minor league games. So that was 2019 season and then a brief time in the minors last season before he was either injured or with the Angels. In that time, he had something like, in 122 games, something like it was 27 homers and 16 steals or something like that. So there's
27-11 in 2019.
Right.
Juice ball, then, but it's the happy fun ball year. And then he had a little happier and more fun in AAA too.
For sure. So I'm not expecting him to do those things, but if it's a little bit like Stephen Kwan, where, except maybe with a little more power and speed, maybe not quite the contact skills, but it's a similar theory. And if Ward can keep a spot in the top four in a lineup that includes Ohtani, Trout, and Rendon, and can hold his own there, if he could have a 769 OPS, which is just exactly what he did last year, and hitting the top four in that lineup, he's going to get you plenty of runs and RBIs. And if he can throw in, a half a dozen steals, he's already got one since he came back, and he's already has one home run. If he can throw in a half a dozen steals, and last year he had 8 homers in 208 at bats. So if he could get, I don't know, can he be a 20 homer guy? Like, if you take eight and 208, that's about 20 and 500 at bats. So could he be a 20 homer guy, a 20 homers, 20 homers, 6 steals? That sounds pretty good to me, especially hitting top four in that lineup. Now, there's a chance that he just doesn't hit well, and then in a few days he's hitting eighth, and none of this works out. But I think he's someone, just based on what Madden has said about him and where he's put him in the lineup right now, who seems to have a lot of upside.
Yeah, I agree. And you got him, what, for 7? The bids were 4, 4, and 3. So at least you tempered your enthusiasm compared to your Kwan bids from the week before, at least. So you learned your lesson a little bit there in terms of reading the league. Maybe not necessarily reading the player, but reading the league. Although Kwan has slumped since he faced real teams and not the Reds and the Royals. But that's my working theory. Not the fact that it was 29 degrees and snowing in Cleveland or anything like that over the weekend. But, that is one of those things where you look at it there. You can look at that there and see that. Sorry, I'm trying to multitask here and not working very well.
Well, I can jump in actually and say that I not only grabbed him for 7 out of 100 in our labor league, but I also grabbed him both of my NFBC money fab leagues for about 85. So
he was in my. I was more around 75 or so. Yeah. So he went for a similar rate. So, I tried, but because everyday player middle of that lineup, that's pretty good. So that's pretty decent.
I think also, like, we just talked a lot about how hitting is really bad so far this year. And we do think it's going to come around. We just don't know to what degree it's going to come around. Now, the NLDH should add a volume of hitters that we haven't had before, because we haven't had a 162 game season where every team has a DH before. But at the same time, if the hitting's bad, maybe getting hitters who are reasonably good off waivers will become really precious. I feel like we went through that for a few years where pitching was really bad, right? And like the happy fun ball time where pitching was really bad and pitchers weren't throwing a lot of innings too. And if you could get any starter who was reliable off waivers, you were like, oh my gosh, right? Like there's not many of those coming through waivers in that particular environment. Who knows? We'll see how this year goes, but maybe the hitters, at least good ones, will be harder to find. It won't be hard to find guys who get plate appearances, but hard to find guys who actually do something with them.
Well, yeah. And I think early on, those opportunities probably present themselves more often than they do later in the season too. Well, you never know. Susugo came and Schwindel got key pickups for me last year that emerged mid to late season. So it can still work. But then again, having him for 5.5 months is huge too. So that's also a pretty big aspect of that there. Mackenzie Gore went for $29 in our league because we drafted in February. This is before, there even was spring training, let alone good spring training results. So we had no idea, that Gore had fixed himself somehow. So he was a heavily contested bid. Tim McLeod, our resident, who likes to draft guys when they're like 14 in this league. So it's not a surprise he was all over Gore. But he won him for 29. There were bids for 16, 13, 7. Were you in on the bidding on him?
Not really. I might have been one of the threes or the twos or the ones. And I like
three. I was a three myself.
Okay. I like.
Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, actually, this might relate back to us talking about the environment. Like, I like Gore, but just on Sunday, so I was interested in Gore. I was interested in Justin Steele, who I have in some other leagues, who you got for three. I was either a two or a one, failed bid on him. I grabbed Eric Fetty, who I was a little bit interested in, who's off to a decent start. I grabbed him for a dollar. I was interested in Michael Lorenzen, who went for, I think, four. I think I had a $1 bid on him. I was not really interested in Paul Blackburn, but maybe I had like a mild interest in him.
I had a $1 bid on Blackburn.
Yeah. So, and then I was, and then I ended up grabbing Hansel Robles, who I didn't think I would get for three, but I squeaked him out. There were three failed bids of two. There's a lot more for people who don't play it. Like, there's way more tied or almost tied bids in our labor league with that $100 budget, obviously, than there is in the NFBC. Yep. So every dollar, when you think about changing your bid a dollar, it does often really matter. Like, you got Justice Steele for three. I guess we don't know who you beat. Someone bid two. It depends where you were in the standings, right, and where that guy was in the standings on Sunday night. So, anyways, so I like Gore. I just didn't feel good about spending that much on a pitcher when there was a whole bunch of other pitchers I liked. Whereas on the hitting side, like, I liked Ward, and I didn't see a lot of other hitters that I was really that interested in.
Correct. And, you know, I get that there. It's less, it's obviously it's less granular because we only have 100 instead of 1,000, and, you know, no $0 bids, no trading of bids. Trading of fab dollars. Yeah. Every dollar matters a lot more. So for sure. Going the decision to go three, it's like, that's one less player I'm getting in September. You know, that if you look at it from that standpoint, I was thinking, what would Fred bid here? Okay. Fred would bid two, but I'm going to go Fred plus one here so I can get it.
I'm actually trying to be a little less cheap early in the season this year. I think that's maybe somewhere where I have room to at least maybe be better or at least be different and see how it works. So with guys like Kwan and Ward, I'm trying to go out and get, without bidding like $300, I'm trying to go out and get the guys I want early in the season. And like I said, I'm really focused maybe right now on deepening my hitter group while we sort through, you know, who comes out of these early season slumps. And I'm trying to upgrade my pitchers maybe more through volume, through adding a couple guys every week until I really hit on someone I like.
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan. I think that makes a lot more sense to go ahead and do it that way.
Yeah.
Going to talk some other news and notes, but before we do that, a quick note from our other sponsor, Better Edge. Bet against others with no fees involved. That's right. No pesky hidden fees to ruin your day. That's right, Harley. No of those hidden fees. You don't like that. Better Edge is a social betting marketplace where there's no fee on each transaction. Better Edge is a social betting marketplace, and chances are it's legal in your state. We bring betting back to its social roots where you can like, comment, and challenge other users all within the app. Play without getting played at Better Edge. Go to betteredge.com. That's BETTOREDGE.com to sign up today. Thanks for the cameo from Harley the dog, who is a total mama's boy. When my wife Kim leaves his site, he goes crazy in the late afternoon because it's walking time, and she's the one that gives him the afternoon walk. I do the morning walks, and so there you go. That's why you hear the yipping dog, who's not a tiny little yipper dog either. He's just a Nancy boy. So there you go. Little fun facts there. All right. I have Cody Bellinger in a couple key places, including labor, also one of my two NFBC main event leagues and a couple others as well. Not playing tonight, by the way, against Max Fried. I think it's just giving a day off against lefty, but homered yesterday, had a pretty good week. You know, I'm not convinced he's fine, but I'm pretty pleased with the latest turnaround. A couple stolen bases in there too.
Yeah. The stolen bases are a great way to boost up his early season value. Yeah. Looking at his numbers, like, so strikeout rate's still not good, which is a big concern with him. Like, his strikeout rate was really bad last year. It's actually very slightly worse so far this year. So that's not great. BABIP's 364. This is in an environment where we aren't getting a lot of high BABIPs. That's 80 points higher than his career BABIP. So, Yeah, I'm not sold yet. I mean, the one thing I will say is we know Cody Bellinger's really talented, and maybe if he just gets off to a decent start this season, then like he can relax. And like I felt like last year he was just always grinding, like he's always either hurt or slumping and could never really get any flow. Like maybe just this might be enough for him to just relax and you know, and put out his A game. But at the same time, like sorry, looking at the advanced stats, it doesn't look great. Like his Statcast at XBA is 249. I guess that's livable for a power hitter who throws in some steals at least. Like that's, like you said, in this environment, it doesn't hurt your team's batting average that much. So
I'm not what you paid for around pick 100 though. Maybe that is what you paid for around 100. Maybe
like if it comes with 15 steals and,
and
27 home runs or something, then that would, then maybe it is.
Those 15 steals would be gold, dude. I mean,
yeah.
They're incrementally up, by the way, stolen base attempts are. Successful stolen bases are about the same as last year. There's a few more attempts so far this year, but just incrementally, just barely. Yeah. By the way, Wander Franco.
The 15 steals, it's maybe a little high, but it could happen. Like 2018, 14, 2019, 15, 2026. Yeah. And if you extrapolate that out, that's basically 16 or so. So, I mean, then last year, everything sucked. So it could happen. That's where the value could really come with him. If he hits 250 with some power and 15 steals, you're fine with where you took.
Yeah. By the way, Wander Franco just hit his first homer of the year off of the aforementioned Justin Steele. So maybe not, Steele's turning to rust a little bit there, but I don't know. Cold weather in Chicago again too. I mean, the Rays just they have like 6 days in a row in Chicago in this nasty weather. Like, why couldn't that series be in June, right?
Yeah, someone's got to go to Chicago in April, and this year they drew the short straw.
Yeah, that's exactly it. More notes from LA versus Atlanta. Huascar Ulloa got sent down after the start. You were going to ask if he's someone to drop. Answer is yes now.
Easy call obviously. Now.
Yeah, they made it. They answered that for us there. Now, the Braves were going with six starters, so I guess that kind of also takes care of that a little bit. Kyle Wright is in. So is Bryce Elder. Which is a little bit of a surprise.
For sure. And I think Ulloa could still have a stretch this season where like he's helpful in fantasy leagues. Like he was very good last year.
Yeah, he was.
When he wasn't injured.
When he wasn't fighting inanimate objects.
That's right.
And losing.
Yeah. Right. But he just came out like he's basically walking a batter per inning. They can't have that. He's still a really young pitcher. Like he's 23, almost 24. You know, send him down for a month even and let him get straightened out and then bring him back up and give these other guys. I don't see much from Bryce Elder to suggest that he's going to be a solution in their rotation. So, but maybe he gets a few more starts while Ulloa goes down to AAA and, you know, tries to get everything figured out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You know, it's interesting watching this Braves Dodgers series. These are, you know, two memorable, NLCSs in a row against each other. These are good teams, and we'll probably see, you know, good chance both will make the playoffs again, although, you know, nothing is ever guaranteed in life, but these, especially once the Braves get Acuna back. But now that the Braves now have Kenley Jansen, the Dodgers now have Freddie Freeman, you know, it spices up that rivalry even more.
Yeah. I think it's the Freeman thing, the Jansen thing's fine. Like the Dodgers basically decided they didn't want Jansen anymore and the Braves picked him up as a short-term closer option. So I don't think there's much animosity there, but the Freeman thing is spicy. Like as far as like him, like it kind of seems in the end, like he didn't mind, like he was pretty happy maybe to leave Atlanta and go home to California and become a Dodger. Like he's been pretty openly excited and emotional about it. And I think that's rubbed some Braves the wrong way a little bit. And then the Acuna comments about Freeman recently where they asked him, what are you going to miss about him? And he said nothing. That I think has added, like you've got two of the better teams in baseball who should be continue to be so for the next few years. So you got a great rivalry on the field. Now you've got this Freeman thing and you've got this love hate for him from the Braves side. I think that's got the potential to be a really nice rivalry.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Yeah. I think both sides kind of protested a little too much. Freeman's like, well, they traded for Olsen before I even, you know, accepted with the Dodgers. But at the same time, like he didn't really push to go back to the Braves either. So I don't know. Yeah. I think both sides are like, oh, we wanted it to happen, but it didn't. And they almost played a politically correct until the Acuña comments. And then that changed things a little bit there. I'm curious to see the reception when Freeman goes back to Atlanta. At least the Dodger fans treated Kenley well. I was glad for that. I'm a big Kenley fan. I think he's underrated for the course of his career.
Yeah, and I think Kenley, yeah, is pretty straightforward as far as he gave everything he had to the Dodgers and was a great closer for them for a while and a solid closer for a while. So Dodgers fans shouldn't feel anything but love for him. And he would have been happy to come back to the Dodgers. They just didn't offer him a contract. So he's pretty straightforward. I think the Freeman reaction in Atlanta will be mostly positive because – like he was their star player for over a decade,
right. And they did deliver a World Series.
Yeah, absolutely. But it seems like there was a bit of a split in that locker room, where maybe it might not have just been Acuña from some of his comments. Maybe some of the younger players.
I was just going to say a generational gap.
Yeah, didn't love his kind of old school, be seen and not heard until your fourth year in the league kind of mentality. So it does seem to be a bit of a generational gap. And I'm not going to hate on Freeman. Like, he came up where that was kind of the way rookies were when he started in 2010, 2011. But guys like Acuña aren't going to settle for that. And good for them. That's not their approach to the game. And I hope that when Acuña is Freeman's age, he treats the young players in baseball the way he wished Freeman treated him.
I think that's a great point. Yeah. And we'll see what happens with that. I want to hop over to Philly. Bryce Harper dealing with elbow soreness. They have to DH him every once in a while, but that means Schwarber and Castellanos in the outfield. And yeah, I don't think too many people really want to see that. You look at the rest of that roster though, too. I mean, there's Alec Bohm is playing third base again. The defensive alignment today has Castellanos in right field, Schwarber in left, in Coors Field, which is like massive acreage out there. Alec Bohm isn't back in the field. They Joe Girardi finally is convinced that he can play the field again. His bat's so good, you kind of have to put him in there. But Rhys Hoskins is not a good defender at first base. Didi can't throw. I mean, at shortstop, it's a bad defense here.
And is that enough to make you change your mind on using some of these Philly pitchers? Like, you're obviously using Aaron Nola, but beyond that, does this change, or do you think it's not enough of a factor? Like, would this change your mind on a Ranger Suarez or Kyle Gibson start?
It hasn't
yet.
Zach Wheeler got crushed the other day. I don't know how much of that. I didn't get to watch that start, so I can't argue. I can't like attest to the defense, whether it was good or bad, or if that had anything to do with it. So, I'll defer on that, but no, I'm not starting Gibson this week because it's Coors Field, not because of the defense.
Yeah.
Because he's exactly the marginal type of pitcher that I'm not going to start in those situations anyhow. Suarez had a bad first start, but that was the Alec Bohm game. That was the one where Bohm, said effing hate it here and all that. After he couldn't even throw the ball across the diamond. Apparently that's fixed now, or at least they think it's close enough to being fixed. But
Suarez was okay in his last start, and the fielding didn't let him down.
He's better than marginal, and Wheeler, obviously you're rolling with Wheeler if you have him. I know he got crushed in his last start, but the investment you put into him, I think it'd be a knee-jerk reaction to bench him at this point in time because of a bad start. So I mean, no, I'm not changing, really. I guess Zach Eflin and Kyle Gibson would be the only ones where I think about it, but no, I'm probably not benching them either if the start's advantageous enough to begin with.
Yeah, so I guess, your answer kind of for now, status quo, if it gets really out of hand with the defense, I guess you can always reevaluate in a couple weeks, but for now, you'll just they're not going to get any help from their defense, but you're still willing to start them if it's a matchup where you otherwise would have started them.
Right, right. I am worried about – are you worried about Harper? I mean, I've got him in one of my two mains. He's hitting .220. He's got the sore elbow. I'm not really worried about the number so far. Two homers, nine RBI, nine runs, and a stolen base. That's fine. But the elbows already have an issue, and we're in week two of the season. That's bothersome. If you're in a trade league, would you consider trying to trade him?
I think I'd hang on because I probably took him in the first round. So I think I'd hang on, like, unless I got a really good offer. Like, I'd trade him for Kyle Tucker right now, who's, you know, like playing really poorly, but I'd rather just take a healthy Kyle Tucker and hope he turns it around. For example, I don't think anyone, the guy who took Tucker, would probably make that deal, but just off the top of my head. How about this? Would you trade Harper right now for Mookie Betts, who's been bad so far this year, but is, no, seems healthy?
No, I'd keep Harper.
Yeah. So the answer is you're just waiting this out.
If I was redoing the first round, which Alan Soslowski wants me to do a video on that with him, but maybe, yeah, if we were to redo the first round, I would still take Harper before Betts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I would still take him ahead of Tucker too, to be honest. Because
there's a
Tucker
still
might be, Tucker might bat lower in the lineup. I mean, Harper was going before Tucker more often than not. There were occasions where it was flip-flopped, but I mean, Tucker could still hit six a lot. I mean, I know he's not tonight, but I don't think he is, at least. I remember seeing him batting. No, he is batting six tonight. I think it was yesterday that I think he batted second. So no, I prefer Harper still.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's a possible trade right there. I think for me, knowing about the elbow, I would probably drop him down a few spots. Okay. Would you trade Harper right now for Luis Robert? Yes. Maybe. He's already got five steals.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Robert, come on down.
Yeah.
Rocket Robert. And it's going to get, and it's going to get warmer in Chicago at some point too. Yeah, I would. I'd absolutely trade Tucker for Robert. I'd absolutely take Robert over Mookie at this point in time. Okay. So yes, I think if I was in that conundrum where I'm like sitting at seventh right now in the draft, you know, and the big five plus, Cole are gone.
Yeah.
And Vladdy's in the big five again, by the way. I'm taking Robert, and I might take Robert over Vladdy if I'm really sweating the stolen bases. I think I'm taking Vladdy though.
Yeah.
I know you weren't earlier. I think, have you reversed your decision on that?
Every time I watch the Blue Jays, I wish I had some Vladdy shares, but which is every night. Yes. But no, I don't really regret, even though they're off to slower, like he's off to a slower start. I don't really regret taking Bichette over Vladdy just because I needed those.
Or no, I wouldn't take Vladdy over Bichette. No,
no, I still kind of have Vladdy where I had him before, which is in that top seven or eight. I have Cole and Burns in there. Like, I have him in that top. I would still have him in that top seven or eight. Okay. How about this one for Bryce Harper? Bryce Harper or Rafael Devers, who's off to a really nice start.
Saul's third base. The difference is Devers really going to run at all?
He had five last year.
Or he had five. I projected him for four this year. That was the difference. Yep. He had five, but got caught five times. Hasn't attempted one this year. No, I think. I mean, it's tempting. Devers is awesome. So, close call there. Close call.
Devers did have more homers, runs, and RBIs than – wait, he had more homers and RBIs and the same amount of runs as Harper last year.
So Harper had a really low RBI total last year, I remember. Is this because Philly's leadoff hitters were so bad last year?
Yes, yes. How about Harper versus Freddie Freeman? Still Harper? Maybe Freeman?
Yes, it's still Harper, I think.
Because Freeman's healthy and in a really good lineup and off to a solid start, so you don't have to, at least doesn't look like.
I guess I'm really not downgrading Harper that much.
You're not. Most of these most of these ones that we've just debated, the elbow would be enough for me to, because it's so slight. So the elbow would be enough for me to put all these other guys ahead of Harper and just make him like a mid-second rounder if I was drafting again right now. But only because he has a higher IL chance than every other hitter that we just mentioned, just by virtue of the fact that
he has something present right now.
Yeah,
sure, of course.
So just the concept that I might miss I'm more likely to lose him for 2 to 4 weeks than any of these other hitters just makes me put him down behind all of them. I'll probably put Machado ahead of him too.
That's fair. Do you have Harper anywhere? Can you act on that?
Where you had him before.
Can you act on that? Do you have Harper anywhere?
I have no Harper.
Okay. But I think it makes sense. I'm not there yet, but I think it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, and this is something that'll swing in the next week. Either in the next week, he'll be back in the outfield and the elbow seems like it's not an issue anymore. And I guess then I might put him back in the first round discussion, but, or in a week, he's still DHing and then we've got a real problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. All right, one more guy I wanted to mention in your list of slumpers. There's a whole lot of people under OPS of 400. I'm going to pick one of those, and that's Franmil Reyes. Dude looks not just – he's not just slumping. He is striking out like it's gone out of style. Have you – I mean,
yep.
I only have him in a couple leagues, but, man, I'm concerned.
Lowest OPS in baseball of any qualified hitter.
321, yeah, that's right.
And 15 we're talking Ks, about a guy, one walk. Yeah. And we're talking to a guy with like zero speed component to his game. Right. So I guess he did steal four bases last year. I can't say zero speed, but basically he, you know, he's there to mash. Lowest OPS so far. So in theory, he's been by some metrics, he's been the worst hitter in baseball so far this year.
Keep in mind, he's two batters behind the great Stephen Kwan and he has two RBI. So that gives you a sign right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, or since I like to spin everything pro Stephen Kwan, think about how many runs Stephen Kwan would have scored if Franmil had just been playing like his normal self so far.
Nah, Ramirez knocked him in every time.
Oh, yeah, he probably did, actually. Ramirez has been on fire. You're right. He's on my labor team. He's been on fire.
Jose Ramirez has been very useful.
He has. Back to Reyes. Yeah, his strikeout rate has always been bad. It was really bad last year, and then it's even worse so far this year. His walk rate is not usually good, but it's not horrendous this year. So far it is horrendous. Yeah, everything is wrong with Franmil Reyes right now. I think, like, I'm not dropping him in any leagues, but I'm like, for sure, I think I need to bench him in a 12 for sure.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I you know, obviously they haven't played a game this week. They've been weathered out 2 days in a row.
Yeah, and
by the way, that's a good thing if you've got Cleveland hitters right now, because you don't want them hitting in this messy cold weather anyhow. I say that, but they missed out on a Dallas Keuchel start, you know, instead. And you know, Lucas Giolito is hurt right now. They don't have to face him, but they also don't have to face any pitcher in cold weather. So I don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag as far as that goes, but they're going to make that game, one of those games up, at least when it's warmer weather, presumably. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. But sometimes you don't mind an April cancellation if they make that game up in June.
Yeah,
especially now that we don't have seven inning no hitters. I mean, no double headers.
That's right. Yes, and Franmil could be a nice buy low right now. Like hit. So everything's wrong with him. Like his XBA is 170. So it's not even like it's not even that he's been incredibly unlucky or something. Like he's just been bad.
Yep.
That being said, he's been streaky before. I think he'll probably hit his way out of this when the weather warms up. He's the kind of guy who I think you can buy low on it. Realistically, it's hard to, like, you can do it, but it's hard to buy low on like first round players, right? Like, because people are often like married to those guys. They really wanted them. Franmil's the kind of guy someone took in round 10. And if he's just really, really bad and the person's benched him, maybe you can go in and get him for pennies on the dollar and stick him on your bench for a couple weeks and see if he comes around. So I think he's an interesting buy low right now. He also jams up your utility spot. Maybe someone's happy to get rid of him for that reason.
Yeah. I mean, he was going like 120 ADP. So maybe, get a 15th rounder for him, you know, trade a 15th rounder for him, you know, baby profit. I mean, I don't even know. I don't even think I'd bench him. I think I'd probably just use him. I'd stash him in my active lineup, and because you don't want to miss the first two good games. I don't know. If you believe in him enough to trade for him, I just play him.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yep. So, but yeah, I think he's the type of buy low, or he also, if you, because I'm always thinking about these trade angles, you know, if the person who has Franmil needs something else, you're like, give me Franmil. Right? Like the person who, maybe you're looking to unload your David Robertson and your third closer, and you look at the guy's roster who wants him, and you're like, you know what? Give me Franmil. Now that would sound like highway robbery during draft season, even on opening day, even maybe after Robertson got his first save or two. But now that Franmil's struggling so much, maybe the person's like, you know what? This guy's causing me more headaches than I know what to do about. Sure, you can have him. I'm not saying we're quite there yet, but maybe we're going in that direction.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe so. We'll wait and see and find out that one. Maybe someone else will come flying at me with a Franmil trade offer now that I've expressed an interest there. Who knows?
The benefits of listening to the end.
Indeed. Indeed. Anything else you want to share before we sign off today?
No, I think I'm good. I don't know. So you were checking the scores. How are my Jays doing right now?
The great Zach Collins has homered again.
Let's go.
It is 1-1. Are you a Zach Collins believer? Is this like, is he finally unlocking that potential that was long feeded of him when he was a White Sox prospect?
Probably not. But if he did, you know what I mean? Like the Jays have a long history of unlocking power hitters, so including Teoscar. So, you know, going back to Encarnacion. So maybe it's not a bad setup for him now with Danny Jansen out for several weeks where, you know, he can kind of rotate in and out of catcher, DH a little bit. They want a left-handed bat. If he's got, this is his chance. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a like opening day trade, basically. They traded Collins for Reese McGuire. They wanted to get a little more left-handed. Maybe they also just wanted him. It's possible.
And I think the White Sox wanted a little with Reese McGuire for the Jays was okay. Like as far as being like a true catcher who also plays fairly well defensively. So I think maybe the White Sox just wanted a little more of an all-around catcher, whereas the Jays with Kirk and Jansen felt like, and Moreno in the pipeline.
I was just going to say there's like, crawling with power hitting catchers. It's weird.
Yes.
And Jansen too. I mean, just he can hit.
Yes. Yeah. I know. The play for the Jays, I still think at some point is to trade Kirk. Yeah. And it might be to trade Jansen eventually, but I think for now it probably is at some point is to promote Moreno later this season and trade Kirk.
Yeah. Our discussion of Franmil prompted two questions. Let's hit them up real quick. Frankie asked, should I pick up Franmil for Andrew Vaughn? Yes, real quick. Sean Davis says Owen Miller for Franmil. I want the Franmil side in every day, twice on Sunday. Nice little streak you got from Owen Miller. Now turn him in for Franmil. Absolutely.
That's April trades right there.
Yeah, that is buy low, sell high. If you can pull that off, great. Good luck. You're probably going to get snap rejected on that offer, but go ahead. You know, can't hurt. Everybody, thank you for commenting. Appreciate it there. I really do like the interaction. So don't apologize if you were chat crazy. We do. We like it. We like that you're interacting with us there. So thank you for that. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Please, as always, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. If you want to check out more, like the Jason Collette's article or Ryan Roos' closer article on the site, go to rotowire.com/try. Get your free 10-day trial there. No credit card is required. We got the Prospect Podcast with James Anderson coming up tomorrow. Thanks for listening to this one. Take care.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.